Blog Talk Radio.
Frederick Jones invented refrigeration systems for trucks, planes, and boats, etc. The traffic light that the truck stops at was invented by Garrett Morgan, who as well invented gas masks, saving many from a horrible death. Lewis Latimer invented the filament for light bulbs, as well as coming up with the diagram for the telephone, earning him recognition and notice from Alexander Graham Bell. The list goes on and on. Emmett Chappelle working with bacteria, Benjamin Boniker with that great wooden clock and the almanac, Henry Brown, the early Filofax suitcase, a lot of people might not know about that one, Marie Brown, the first video home security system in 1969. So, okay, what do all these inventors have in common? They're all African American. What else do most of them have in common? Most people have no idea who they are. Now, how does this fit in with tonight's show topic? Well, sometimes the truth about our human past is not always what you think. If you don't believe me, just ask the people of ancient Egypt, or should I say ancient Kemet.
Kemet.
Chimera.
Kemet.
Queen Mother Imaku will be our guest this evening on Main Street Universe.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Om Shabbat Shalom, holy way of the Most High. Om Shabbat Shalom.
back, everybody, after some chaotic energy in the beginning. But feeling much better now, and welcome to the Main Street Universe Radio Network. We're back here in Cafe Fairfax, live in studio. So for those of you that missed hearing me hitting the cymbals every once in a while, we're back. Okay. And I'd first like to welcome my hostess, not co-host, but hostess, Janice R. White.
Welcome, everybody.
And Janice, how was your week? You were at PSG and all kinds of other fun.
I was at PSG and was in Chicago for about 4 days afterwards. And PSG, it rained and rained and rained. But the worst day was Friday. It was almost completely rained out on Friday. But Saturday and Sunday were great days. And the main ritual was great on Saturday night, which was summer solstice, and got to meet a lot of people. A couple of them are going to be guests coming up real soon.
Oh,
so
yes. And let's make those announcements and then get right to our show, because I see our guest is here now.
Okay.
We see you there, Queen Mother, and we'll get to you in just a second and get your mic on. All right. Yeah, I'd like to announce that coming July 10th will be Jason Fitzwaters.
Fitzwaters, yes.
From the Wild Hunt.
From the Wild Hunt.
Very nice to talk to him. I think he's a good journalist. And for those of you that don't know what the Wild Hunt is, it's sort of an online, I guess you would say, pagan interface newspaper,
yes,
or something like that. And he's pretty fair.
Yes.
At least the things I've read by him, we're not heavy on the opinions. He's pretty fair at covering things. I think he does a good job.
He doesn't take sides, or at least
not much. I mean, there might be, like, inklings, but, you know, like, that's natural. That would be hard for me not to take some kind of side. But, so he'll be with us July 10th. And then July 24th will be Selena
Fox.
We'll be again here at the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
We had a long talk at PSG, and she agreed to be interviewed on the 24th.
Under the condition that she does, in fact, receive
a T-shirt.
Main Street Universe T-shirt. Because we do have some.
I want one too.
Some Main Street Universe bling, swag, whatever the words that are these kids are using these days. So maybe some coffee mugs and things like that. Some of them are a little more expensive, but you don't need to know all that. Some of the stuff you get great and cheap, though. So we're going to give some away on the show as well, and also to some of our guests. And, of course, then coming up on August 7th will be the author of True Magic,
Amber Kay.
Amber Kay.
Yes, I met her. She did a wonderful class called Dark Goddesses, where she explained a lot about the dark goddesses and the occult, and that how you should pay attention to them and why you should pay attention to them. And she covered Hecate and Tiamat, Sekhmet, and one called Ipis, E-P-I-S, and a lot of them, actually. So she's going to be talking about that, and she's also going to be talking about her book, True Magic, and she has a fairly new book out called Candomys, which is in bulk for those people, February holiday.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the Catholics adopted it and called it Candomys and adopted the Brigid and recalled her a saint and all of that sort of thing. So, yes, Amber Kay on August 7th. Now, when we did the opening, if you are here listening, I mentioned a few people, Frederick Jones, who invented refrigeration systems. I mentioned Garrett Morgan, who invented traffic lights, stoplight, Louis Latimer, the inventor of the filament for the light bulb, and other African-American inventors, and how it ties in with this evening show, because sometimes our human past is not always what people think or always what we're taught.
Yeah.
And as I said, if you don't believe me, ask the ancient Egyptians, or in this case, the ancient Temerans, or the people of ancient Kemet. But don't ask me about it, because I'm not the expert. Instead, ask our guest, Miss Queen Mother Imaku, and your mic, I'm turning it on now. It's doing that twirly thing. Give it a second. You know how that happens sometimes. And your mic is on. Welcome to Main Street Universe.
Welcome.
Peace and blessings. How are you this evening?
Doing well.
We are fine. How are you?
Oh, wonderful, an affair. It was really a wonderful day. Can't complain. I'm still here. So that makes it a good day already.
I agree.
so, Queen Mother.
I was listening to you talk about who your upcoming guests are. And, you know, it's so funny because, Daniel, you and I were talking the other day about Amber Kay and the book True Magic, and I still recommend it to my students, even though it's not a comedic book. She touches a bit on her take on ancient Egypt, but the reason I recommend the book is because she has a really strong stance on ethics. And
yes, she
that's
does.
Something that I... And so I love... I call it the Little Green Book. I don't even know if it's still green, but back way long time ago, years and years and years ago, when I first bought it, when it first came out, it was a Little Green Book. So it's very exciting that you're going to have her as a guest. And I'm really intrigued, Sister Denise, by the fact that you met her. Because since her name was Amber Kay, I thought there was, you know, there was this kind of veil around her. And listen, back when I was coming up a long time ago, there were a lot of magical books that were written where people used their magical names, and you really never knew exactly who the person was. You just got the info that was passed on. Sometimes there were books that were sort of these little self-published, a little more than pamphlets. Maybe it had maybe about 10, possibly 20 pages, but they were full of potent stuff. And
yeah.
There was a veil around it. Remember those days? Now people are so in tune with Western culture and Western education, and even though they're looking for the esoteric, they're still wanting to know, well, who is this person and where all the references in the book and all this. That's not the way that it was when I came through years ago. I mean, the information was passed on mostly from mentor to students, and you know, you listened very carefully, and then if you happened to go into a well, then, you know, New Age was just coming in vogue all those years ago, but into a New Age store or an occult store, and you saw these books, you were just glad to get the information, and you knew that it was coming from a credible source, and you respected the fact that it was veiled. Today, people are just wanting to have magic their way. So,
yeah,
anyway,
and it's causing a little bit of uproar, you know, physically with the cosmos and stuff.
Well, it's the age of information has good and bad. You know, it has accessibility, and then you weed your way through the good and the bad. I think having accessibility is still maybe better. I think the old model you're talking about maybe feels a little more like quaint or something. You know what I mean? Or like a club or something like that. But when you find it. But I do remember those short publications. You would find them in New Age shops and head shops sometimes. You just might find one in the corner in the hippie shop.
Listen, not that I went to a head shop, because that's not where my head was. But I remember hearing that was a place where you'd be able to pick them up, too.
Yes. Well, Queen Mother, I found her to be quite nice and cordial, wanting people to ask a lot of questions, and, you know, people going into their stories and not interrupting people, you know, if their question was too long or what have you. I found her to be really cordial and definitely knowing her stuff. And I have her True Magic book, and mine was a Little Green Book too, but I think now she has a bigger book, same book, but more information now. So, I'm going to be really happy doing the interview with her on the 7th of August.
Now, what I wanted to do, Queen Mother, is I wanted to get now into some of your work. And in case you don't know, we're in a music studio we do the show from, in case you occasionally hear a drum or something like that. And I guess we'll start right from the beginning. And I will ask you, and, you know, I want you to understand that I'm asking some of these questions as if the people have no idea in the audience who you are, at least at first, and we'll go a little more complex after that. So I want to ask you as a child, if you don't mind me asking, what was the original religion or spirituality of your upbringing?
Okay, I'm starting to say I'm not bold enough to assume that everybody on the planet knows who the heck I am. So I always think this
is your own Main Street universe.
Hey.
I always take things from the approach of being able to share right from the start. And so your question that you asked me was, what was my original religion? Is that what
I heard?
Yeah,
original spirituality religion growing up as a kid.
Yes.
Or the one that you were...
Well, in truth, I was always in tune with nature, but I was raised as a Baptist, so in the Christian faith. And
yes,
I mean,
me too.
All involved in terms of being in Sunday school, becoming a Sunday school teacher as a teenager, being in the choir, being on the junior usher board, all of those things, choir director. I mean, that was my world until I was 24. And even though at first that's what I was raised in, the Baptist faith is not really one that emphasizes the whole thing about getting saved. At least, well, in some churches, they do, but back then it was just a matter of joining the church. It wasn't a matter of you had to be saved. So then the born-again movement came along, for those of you who remember back in the 70s, and I got scared into getting
saved. 70s, I remember it well.
Right. So I got scared into getting saved when I was 14. So, because the whole fire and brimstone, and there was an elder in the neighborhood who made it a point to come and visit every single teenager in our neighborhood, and so most of us ended up getting saved because we were scared we were going to go to hell. So for the next 10 years, I was a born-again Christian, but during that time, I had questions the whole way that few people were able to provide answers for. There just seemed to be so much contradictory information, and being something of a geek, well, a very definite geek back then, and I proudly still proclaim that I am, that meant that I would do as much research and personal questing for knowledge as possible. And the more I delved into the studies, for which I'm grateful because it has served in good stead for the work that I'm doing today, but the more I delved in, the more questions I had, and the more I also saw that these inconsistencies did not sit well with me, and that there were a lot of things that seemed to be purposely misleading, and also there were things that were left out. I was introduced to what was back then new, the Strong's Exhaustive Concordance, and it had every single word in the King James Bible from the to it, and gave the original Greek and Hebrew meanings of the words. And so then I started breaking scripture down and saying, wait a minute, this doesn't mean this. It doesn't mean this. This doesn't mean this. So, that was the beginning of the end for me. But, again, I'm grateful because actually the Christian background that I had is something that I still hearken to today, because it gave me a great deal of self-discipline in terms of self-study. It gave me greater insights in terms of being able to do cross-correlations. As I left the Christian faith and I was like a kid in a candy store, I went on this journey to find what would be resonating with truth for me. So that meant I went through a number of paths. I mean, I was Buddhist, I was Nichiren Daishonin Buddhist, I was, of course, the Wiccan path was early on, Native American paths and Taoism, I mean, you name it. I mean, I've sat at Baha'i firesides. I really have gone the gamut. Eventually, I found Orisha traditions, which really very much spoke to me, and so Yamaja and I were hanging tight for a while. All this during the time when I had discovered a metaphysical church. I lived in Phillipsburg, New Jersey, and nearby was the Lehigh Valley area where Allentown, Bethlehem, Easton are. And in Allentown, there was this metaphysical church back then called a spiritualist church, because at that time, that's when the term New Age was just starting to get in vogue and considered PC, so a lot of spiritualist churches started changing over to that title. But when I joined, it was still a spiritualist church, and eventually became ordained as a healing minister, and also went on to take classes for 2 years as for ordination as a regular minister. But we were as part of the curriculum, we had to take classes in world religion, So that delved me in even more, and I was able to do even more in terms of cross-correlation. We took healing classes. We did Oracle. I mean, it was really quite comprehensive. And it was interesting, though, because I was one of only three black people in the church. So there are a lot of times when I used to wonder, why am I here? Because I didn't think that my journey for truth would include being in this church. Although, in truth, the folks that were there were my family. This was St. John's Church of Faith, which birthed Metaphysical Universal Ministries. And they have one of the largest New Age expos in the country every year now. But I learned a great deal from these folks who appeared to be we're talking about the Lehigh Valley area. We're talking about where there was still a lot of farm country and people who had been there for generations, you know, a lot of Germanic folks and that kind of thing, Pennsylvania Dutch kind of energy. And in fact, it was they called themselves Dutchies, a lot of them, you know. But let
and
me
they
tell
have
you
their
something.
Own magic.
Yes, they do.
Those Christians kind of have their own, like, rune magic.
Oh, let me tell you, those folks are no joke. I learned some serious wicked stuff from them. They were everyday-looking people. You walk past them on the street, you would never know they carried so much power and knowledge and ability because they were so humble with it like that. You know what I mean? There are some people where they amass knowledge, they amass some abilities, and they're trying to show it off to everybody, and you find out that the higher you get regarding growth and personal wisdom, the more you realize that that's completely unnecessary, and it's bombastic, and you're really showing less of a developed character if you do that. So humility is truly key. So anyway, I was introduced to quote-unquote Egyptian culture while I was there. I didn't really vibe with it, not with the way that it was being presented, because it was coming from, quite frankly, a very Eurocentric point of view. That was one thing that I really just could not, it bothered me, you know, and
right.
But I felt like there was something else underneath it that I was supposed to be getting. You know, so and they were having trips back and forth to, quote-unquote, Egypt, and people would come back and bring the sacred oils and bring statues and you know, in the meantime, I'm looking at it and going, there's something about this familiar, but it's not really hitting home. So
mm-hmm.
I wasn't feeling Isis. I wasn't feeling Osiris. I wasn't, you know. Well, one day I was watching a show that was called Like It Is, and it dealt with African culture. Blessings upon ancestor Gil Noble, he transitioned. And so he had on a great scholar who is called Dr. Ben. And he was talking about how Egypt, being in Africa, was originally called Kemet.
Mm-hmm.
The Greeks eventually called it Egypt. But the great pyramids and the temples and all of that were populated by people who looked like me.
Mm-hmm.
It blew my mind. And that, in truth, a lot of the guardians, or the Nechuru, the forces of nature who all comprise Nechur, the one creative force, which is understood to be male and female, and the various aspects of it represent the various faces of the creative force, that they were depicted with faces that looked like mine. And that many of them were whitewashed, or some of the features were altered in order to make them look more Caucasoid. So, you know, to be scientific. But I then started thinking about what I was being taught at the church, and then realized I needed to get with somebody who would be able to teach it from an African perspective. So that sent me on my journey, and long story short, that brought me to where I am now. I found out that there indeed were black Kemetic communities who had brought our traditions back to us, and they were very strong and thriving heavily in the New York area. And so that led me to where I am now.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, and I can understand, I had a friend that went to Egypt recently, and they had mentioned how, though Egypt is part of Africa, like the Egyptian tour guides that lead you around and people, it's like the Middle Eastern descent in the Middle East has sort of claimed Egypt. I don't mean they've officially claimed them, but you know what I mean? But it's happened historically, and they're like saying, like, and people think, oh, it's a country in the Middle East, but actually it's an African country. You know, a lot of people, and the people in the paintings you see, they look, you know, sort of slightly lighter brown, but there's so many statues and so many old paintings of dark brown people with African features.
Many paintings.
To some people, it's definitely news to hear that the Egyptians were, in fact, originally African, and whatever may have happened over history evolved, as things do in every country and every part of the world, change things. Art is destroyed or manipulated.
Stolen.
Documents, same thing, you know, stolen, manipulated, whatever. And so it is an interesting thing. And as your journey through Kemeticism continued, I wanted to ask about reactions from people, because you say in your bio, you know, Kemetic street minister, and I guess priestess, or even high priestess in this case, would apply. And do you ever get, this is curiosity for me, do you ever get any flack from people as far as a female spiritual leader? And I sometimes ask that of women in that position. Like, do they say, oh, do you ever have people say, like the holy rollers from your past, maybe, you know, the Baptist, you know, oh, they're expecting the minister, they're expecting the preacher to be a man. So have you ever had any debates in that direction?
Well, I mean, truthfully, there are so many black women who are ordained ministers now, so that is not really an issue at all. In fact, we have a number in my family. I think the greater question that I'm presented with is, what is this? What do you believe? And, you know, in the Bible it says that the Egyptians were evil and that they led to, you know, the downfall of this and this and this. And my response is always quite matter of fact. I explain that the Bible in and of itself was changed so many times, and especially during the 4th century with the Council of with the Nicene Council, and that was done for political reasons in order to keep control of the people, and that there actually were originally other chapters or books rather in the Bible, and that anything that was going to be enlightening in an independent, empowering way was removed. But further than that, I explain that while yes, Kemet did fall, and it was due to there being a compromise in the 42 laws that we stand upon, and that the Kemites, or the Kemaus, we say, people of Kemet, believed themselves with and maintained harmony and order with for thousands of years. Yes, that did happen, but hearken to the history that has been hidden from us, which affirms the fact that it was black Africans who taught high culture to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that when you go to museums and see what I call our ancestors' stolen artifacts, while it is affirming, it is also very disheartening in a way because of the fact that all of these items were stolen, including sacred documents, including other things to affirm the power and majesty of the influence on civilization. I mean, truth is truth, and so some things have been slowly coming to light, have been revealed, and have resurfaced. But looking at just from our history in this country, I remind my family and others who ask who are of the Christian faith, I remind them that we didn't come into this country as Christians. When we were brought here, Christianity was imposed upon us. And our original religions were back in the motherland. And also the fact that, you know, look at how much history from our being brought here was hidden from us as well, and how many of us are scrambling to reclaim what was ours. I mean, can you imagine what it is like if you if a child has been ripped from his or her parents and is very much aware of the fact that he or she is not living with family and is having this other culture forced upon him or her, yet and still in the back of the memory somewhere, you know that this is not really your culture and these are not really your people. And on top of that, you're being told that you're nothing, you offer nothing of value except in labor, and in that you're not even getting paid. So, you know, there has been a constant struggle for our people over these many years to reclaim who we are. So in bringing people back to that level of reality, it makes it easier for folks to then say, okay, well, wait a minute. Yeah, all right, you know, then I need to take a look at this. It doesn't mean that they have to convert. You know, there are good things that, you know, that in Christianity. I know a lot of pagans are probably hating right now, but I mean, I used to be there too. After I left Christianity, I took my Bibles and threw them in the trash. But I now have several different Bibles on my shelf, and mm-hmm. I use them as a point of reference a lot of times when I teach, especially for people who are doing the crossover thing where they're still in Christianity, but they still want to learn their culture. So, and also with things like one time my cousin, she saw me at a function and she saw me wearing my ankh ring. So she said, what is that? Is that called, an ankh? I said, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. She said, what does it mean? I said, well, it means life. It was the original cross. She says, I mean, I don't go into any kind of deep diatribe or anything like that. I just very simply put, it means life. It was the original cross. So that, breaking things down in that way, and also by the measure of my character, I have worked on myself for years now. I'm still a work in progress, but I've come a long, long way. And it's not that I was a bad person before, but I must say that the kinetic faith has truly molded and shaped me into a much, much better person. So if you're a good person, and, you know, I mean, you can't really argue too much with that. If you're living a good life and your faith is strong and you're not judging other people and you find common ground, because that's truly what I do when I talk to other folks. And, yeah, I still go to Baptist churches. I go and have a good time. I know who I'm praising, you know, and I know the truth behind the scriptures that are being read, because the Kemetic scriptures predated what was in the Bible by thousands of years. And a lot of the texts that were in the Bible are in the Bible were taken from Kemetic texts originally. A lot of the mythology came from Kemet first.
Oh, yeah,
so,
Christ, Jesus, and all that.
I have a deeper understanding of, well, I'm not saying comparatively, I'm not trying to be holier than thou. I'm just saying for me personally, I have come to a deeper level of understanding about all of that, but I can still very comfortably go and sit in a Baptist church. I go to a Catholic church in Midtown Manhattan a number of times, just to experience the beauty and all that's there, but also to take a look at all the stuff the things that were taken from Kemetic culture. The thing is to relate to spirits and to find beauty in all things. And to me, that is the most important thing. The Kemetic path has brought me to a place of peace and inner standing. So, you know, I don't get into religious arguments. I don't get into spiritual arguments. I don't do that. You know, and people who are truly Kemetic do not do that either, because you know that you have to really respect people for where they're at.
That is so true. And I know for myself, I go to churches too, just to sit in a church. I guess that's part of the Christian upgrading that I have.
Around people that are believing in something higher than themselves. It's an interesting experience.
Yes.
You know?
And every city has, like I was just in Chicago, and there was an artist that was doing his art, and he had very interesting art. It was almost Santerian-like with the drawings of the different people and the drums and the red and the yellow and the orange of the flames and everything. But it was totally peaceful for me just to sit there and stare at his drawings. So that's if I go to church at all, I go to just be around the people and be around the building and, you know, just sit in the back like you do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'll sit in the back.
Yeah, I'll sit in the back. Sometimes I'll sit in the front, depending on what my mood is. So
I think, like you said, how the Kemetic tradition brought you peace. I think when you become more at peace with your path, even though mine's extremely eclectic, but I have a very eclectic pagan path. But you, when you're at peace with it, you start all those judgmental qualities. They start to fall away. They just sort of are like, you know what? I'm kind of at peace where I am. I don't really need to be like, gosh, that guy over there, I don't like what he's doing. You just sort of lose that. You know?
Yes, you do. And see, in terms of any discussion that people might have with me where they're just trying to make sure that I'm not going to hell, I will engage in that just enough, but basically for them to really have a deeper understanding of where I'm coming from and that I'm okay. And if I can serve as a portal to open, to retrieve the knowledge of our ancient history and culture, then so be it. But in the meantime, I am not there to proselytize. You know, in the Christian church, well, in the born again days, we used to call it Jesus jamming. So
yeah.
I'm not.
All right.
Right, so the same way that I wasn't really into Jesus jamming, even though we were taught to, eventually when I learned the term, I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't believe in Jesus jamming when it comes to my Kemetic faith, too. I'd much rather find the common ground. And if there's something that's uplifting, of course, that I can share in terms of Scripture, in terms of our beliefs that will help somebody else, then, of course, I'm all for it. Because after all, I'm a minister in the faith. I'm a high priestess. I'm a queen mother. So I'm here for service and for counseling and for spiritual guidance. But again, I really try to start from a place of commonality as opposed to beating people over the head with what I believe.
Because beating people over the head doesn't really do anything for them, and it doesn't do anything for you either.
No. Don't get me wrong now, because I have students across the country.
Okay.
And of course, you know, when I deal with my students, then it is my job to really make sure that they understand the tenets of our faith.
Okay. That's what you're trying to say. You're allowed to beat your students. So.
I put my foot in their neck when I need to, you know. Listen, we are Kemau. I see you on Facebook talking like you're crazy. All right, you're engaging in arguments with people about nonsense. Check yourself, okay? Because this is not how we are. Yeah, so, in that case, absolutely.
Yes.
And what we're going to do right here, Queen Mother, is take a brief break and come right back. It's been already about 40 minutes. Time's flying.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to go here. And when we come back, we'll talk some more about some specifics of your tradition, Kemetic tradition, Akeru Temple, as well as some of your artistic endeavors. So we'll get into all of that. And what I'm going to go up here now is get to one of my favorite local bands and good friends of mine, which is Woven Green. And this is a song I play often by them. And we'll come right back after this and one of our new plugs by Nathan Anderson. And we'll be back in just a minute or two.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network. Archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
All right, thank you, Mr. Anderson, and we're back.
Yes, we're back.
Main Street Universe, we have Queen Mother Imaku. And your microphone is back on, Queen Mother. Thank you for joining us this evening.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
And let me just do a brief station plug, and we'll get right back to our conversation, including something I want to discuss with you particularly. I kind of wish Brett was here, because he would really be into that, but he'll hear the archive.
Brett, yeah,
Brett couldn't make it tonight. He sent me a quick message that he might, because I know there's one aspect he wanted to discuss, I think, too, with this. But very quickly, Mondays, 9 p.m. Eastern, Kevin Baird walking on the sidewalk. Tuesdays, 10:30. Now it's back in the a.m. It kind of bounces back and forth. It's our only a.m. show. Our only a.m. show, Inner Wisdom with Mary Phelan. Mary has been on television for 14
telepathic
years.
Telepathic TV. Yes,
but same,
I work for her.
Yes. Janice is
audio and CGI.
Oh, cool. So then, of course, Wednesday's the one you're listening to, the flagship show that started it all.
Mainstream Universe.
Then Thursdays now at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. I can't do a drum roll with one hand, but reaching across the room here. Queen Mother Imaku. I don't know if she has a name for her show yet, but it'll be 1 p.m. Thursdays Eastern Time, right, Queen Mother?
That's right. Correct, too.
Yes, and I might be doing a piggyback because I want to create a woman's spirituality show, maybe piggybacking after yours, Queen Mother.
Oh, okay, wonderful.
Yeah.
And then Fridays at midnight, we got two more shows to do. Midnight, Fridays, Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour with Jesse Ann Nicholas George, the author of two books, actually going on four. So feel free to tune in at midnight,
yes.
Our one late night show. Of course, sometimes when you're doing a late night show, there's the heavier risk of trolls and stuff like that.
Lots of trolls on her show sometimes.
But, you know, that's radio. If you really consider the record, we've been on air for, it's coming around to close to 2 years, year and three quarters, and five or six nights of trolls, it really isn't all that bad.
Yes.
And it's happened to us before, too. But then our final show, Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time,
Darren Boucher. Yes.
With his show, Spiritual Insight. Darren is a reader at Marie Laveau's House of Voodoo in the magical city of
New Orleans. Yes.
So last week, Darren had a mortician on discussing.
Very interesting show.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we're back. And we want to discuss, Queen Mother, a couple of programs and a couple of aspects of specifically your Kemetic tradition and the Akeru, if I'm saying that right, temple. And two things I'd like to bring up right away is the meaning of the word Akeru. I'd like for you to...
Well, Akeru has multiple meanings. But first of all, let me just say, everybody's more than likely already familiar with the imagery of Akeru because they are the double lions. You see lions out government buildings, people's homes, estates, down around the way on the corner.
Right, yes.
Oh, lions.
Lots of buildings in D.C.
Yes. So the double lion comes from the Akeru in ancient Kemet. There is one lion in the imagery that faces the past. There is another one that faces the future. So they are east and west. They have the sun that sits in the middle, and that represents today. Well, what does that mean? It means that you can pull energy from your ancient past for success today, meaning ancient wisdom, energy from your ancient self, from other ancients. We deal with the extremely ancient guardians, many that are little known, but they have made themselves known to us. They are the ancestors of Re. There's also Re, or who people commonly call Ra. It's really supposed to be pronounced Re. It also means that you can cast energy from the past into the future for success. It also means that you can pull some energy from the future and pull it into today, but it means ultimately the wisdom that comes from the past that you carry into your future, and that, you know, using these energies will help to shape you to be your best self today. The Akeru, the lords of time. And so because of that, many of our guardians who sit at the top of our Paut Necheru. The Paut Necheru are the company of guardians, and each temple has their own specific set of company of guardians that that govern, that protect, that that guide. And so the most ancient aspects have a lot to do with time and travel through the universe and making connections, timely connections, woven through the strands that bind us together throughout the universe. And so you learn more about that as you come into the temple. Akeru is an ancient term that predates the more popular term Sankofa, which is an Akan term, which means going back to and retrieving the wisdom of your past into today so you can have a successful tomorrow. It is an honoring of the ancestors. It is knowing that we are here because our ancestors were and that our ancestors are, that they still walk with us, and that we in the future will be an ancestor. It is the goal to be an Eaku, who is a high ancestor of light. The Shepsu are the ancestors of light that walk closest with us and guide us on a daily basis in ways known and unknown. The Eyaku are the ones who walk closest with the creative life force and influence us in ways known and unknown. And so it is the hope for the future that if you live right, you'll die right, and that you will wake up in the next phase of existence in with dignity and ready to move into a place of guidance for those who are left behind here on this particular earth plane and those who are connected to our bloodline.
Okay, and I, and it's spelled A-K-E-R-U for the listeners, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
All right.
And I have a question, and I'll hand it back over to Janice.
Yes.
Our one microphone died out on us. I got to get a couple new things, working on all that. But I have one because this is one I thought Brett might be interested in, and many people that are pagan, is the Kemetic tradition has, you know, believes in using, and you discuss this, old original language in your prayers. And as well, and I want to go just even beyond a step beyond that, but we'll talk about that too, the Kemetic runes, because I know a lot of pagans are really into the Norse thing and the Norse runes. And I wonder if you could go into some of the history of runes, and maybe even if they have a Norse connection, but were older than that and were Kemetic and then maybe found their way up there somehow. So if you could explain that, I think there are many pagans that would be interested in that.
I know I would.
Well, absolutely. I must tell you that when I broke the code and found that each of the Norse runes has its origin connected to a Kemetic glyph, what we call Medunetur. We call the hieroglyphs the word of God, and so are the words of God. And the only reason I knew this or came to know this was because Spirit truly forced it upon me so that I could find out, because years ago when I was in the metaphysical church, and this one sister, she had these runes. Now, you know, at the time we were doing our witchy thing, you know, we were both sharing different things, and, you know, I'm working with this, and I do this, and I do this. So I was hanging at her house one night, and so she throws a bag of runes down in front of me. What's this? They're runes. They work. Take them. I was like, what's this got to do?
I've been given two pairs of runes.
You say what?
I've been given two pairs of runes by two different sets of people, actually. So I use them every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I found them to be eerily precise, so much so that it scared me, and eventually I threw them in the trash.
Okay.
But I couldn't figure out, I was like, what has this got to do with my life? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because even within the even though I was kind of, you know, at first I was Wiccan, and I was like, but I really, I did something about this, and it's not me, but I was trying to find my way back to the African traditions, and a lot of folks go through Wiccan as a gateway religion, as they say, because the tenets are so very close to Kemetic beliefs, and also to the beliefs in Orisha tradition, so... you know, Iwapele, you know, living up to gentle character. So anyway, but yeah, so at this point, still, I'm still more on the path of trying to find the African and so forth, and she gives me these runes, and I was just like, I don't know. So, and she had made them personally, too. So,
And you
spoke well, listen, I didn't know.
okay.
But somehow they kept coming back to me. People coming up to me and talking about them. And I'm going to tell you something. I had a really amazing conversation with, her name can't escape me right now. People know her as Auntie Orwin. Jean Sibley.
Oh, I love Jane. Yeah.
Jane Sibley. Listen, the week before that, we were both at this festival, and I went into her tent, you know, trying to make small talk, but, you know, Jane's pretty stoned unless she gets to know you. So a week later, we're at this other festival, and here we are on the way to this other festival, and I walk into the cafeteria, Jane throws her arms open. Yaku! And I'm looking at her like, is this the same person who grumbled me last week? She says, I hear that you're a high priestess in Kemetic culture and that you know all about it. And I want to sit down and talk to you about maybe the possible connection with runes, you know? So
yeah.
I'm like, well, all right, you know. So later on that night, she breaks out the mead, all right?
She has great mead.
And she has some serious mead. And I'm not a drinker, okay? But next thing you know, we're drinking mead, and there's a whiteboard there. And so we're both up at the whiteboard. She's showing me her books, and I'm like, yo, that symbol looks like such and such. Wow, that symbol looks like such and such. And so, I'm explaining to her what it means in the Kemetic tradition. She's like, oh, in Northern tradition, it means such and such, you know? So, for the next couple of nights, we're getting off on the geek vibe, you know? And,
mm-hmm.
It really stuck with me. I was like, were my Kemetic ancestors in the Nordic region or what, you know? I mean, I didn't know. I had no idea. And then the next year, we had a chance also to just sit down but you really, really got me thinking. And I had to think also about the fact that through the years, there have been Black folks who have come to me and said, Queen Mother, have you ever used runes before? I don't know why, but they speak to me, you know? So then finally, I was at a conference, and I was given a set of runes by Mary Alice Merit. And, you know, she was trying to give it to me as a gift. It was so sweet, you know. But I was like, well, that's all right. And she said, you know, well, they're carnelian. I was like, oh, man.
Ooh.
That's a sacred temple.
Yes,
it is. I said, well, I guess that means I got to take them, okay? And then along comes Galina Kraskova. And I'm hanging with her and her friend Laura Pastores. Who's also connected to our temple now. That's another story. But anyway, and I find out that Galina is an expert, and she has written this book. She gives me this book as a gift. I get home from that conference, and these runes started talking to me.
Mm.
And I took them out, and one by one, they started revealing who they were. So, I mean, it took a lot out of me, right? So I gave it a rest. But then a short time after that, maybe, you know, several days later, I was transfixed at my kitchen counter. They would not let me stop until each one was revealed to me.
Mm.
And my mind was blown, because I found that every single one related back to a Kemetic glyph, every one. And the meaning, the meanings are so very similar. Now, I'm going to tell you something. After I announced that I broke the code, I got a death threat on Facebook.
Oh. Really?
Yeah, some white dude sends me in the runic alphabet, he sends me a death threat and an image that he drew of himself and an image of me, you know, and he's sending me this, you know, negative energy, you know. I mean, I was just like, oh, man. Come on. So, and then he just like popped into my page and somehow popped out, and I traced him back, and he goes into this group that he's in and talking about, yeah, I sent it to her, you know, and then people are like, yeah, we're going to get her now. People are really upset about the fact that I traced it back to Kemet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very ridiculous.
After I made a YouTube video and announced that I was offering workshops in this, and that I also, you know, make the Kemetic runes, and we call them Renu. The word Ren means name. Renu means the many voices of Ra, or God.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Word
so,
right.
Anyway, and so now on YouTube, I'm getting folks talking about, you Afrocentrists want to take everything. Why can't you just leave it alone?
Man, for real?
I stumbled onto a couple of threads where I was the subject. it was a pagan... neo-pagan, what's the word? they liked using the N-word, which I was called, and, you know, it was also said that, oh, N-words couldn't possibly figure it out, you know, we're too stupid, that, you know, black people don't have that kind of intelligence, you know, also, what, doesn't look like she's all there anyway, and, you know, why do these Afrocentrics have to bother anything, and they just want to be us? I mean, it was quite amazing. So after that, though, I noticed that after I announced that I broke the code, that there were some websites that conceded that, yes, these symbols could be traced back to Kemet.
Okay.
And can I say something as the Caucasian male in here? Who's, you know, bald-headed with a goatee, but certainly disagrees with those characters that you mentioned. You know what's really odd, and growing up partially in the country, I kind of grew up, you know, I was from Baltimore City, then we moved out to the country, and then those same rednecks that'll say, this is what they'll say, I can tell you from, like, the inside, so this is what I'm trying to give you, some inside information, they'll say, not that you probably couldn't guess, but they'll say, oh, you can't teach them nothing, they couldn't figure things like that out, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, they'll say all those things, but then, if they run into a very educated person who's of a race they don't approve of, especially black, then they'll say, like, we don't teach them, they'll become dangerous, they'll take over. So I'm like, okay, well, which one is it? Is it they can't, or, you know, so it's all fear is my whole point.
It's all fear.
This is, I mean, you have to remember that that kind of mentality is something that most of us grew up with. Even up north here, which we call the South. I mean, in New Jersey, it's there's still a lot of that kind of behavior that persists. Usually it's on the QT, but it's still there. And New Jersey was the last northern state to end slavery. I mean, they really didn't want to let it go.
Oh, and I didn't know that.
Every port that is here in New Jersey and every place there's a beach, enslaved Africans were brought in. So when I go to beaches, I pray for the souls that were brought in, for those who were tossed overboard, for those who elected to go overboard, in the same way that every year at Coney Island we have the gathering that is the remembering the ancestors, it's Ancestor Day. And we honor all of those who died in the transatlantic slave trade. So anyway, but no, this is not news.
No, it's not.
I'm going to tell you something else. I have a question. Let me share this, please.
Okay.
Before I was invited to a lot of these different gatherings and had to actually take a little break for a while because there were so many people who thought they were in the shadows and having conversations that were really very racist, very cruel. I heard a lot of things from people who were in leadership, you know, who really had two faces. And I needed a break. If people are proclaiming to be who they say they are, then it's time for this to be addressed. People think that by being of an alternative religion that it makes them more liberal than thou. And a lot of times people don't want to face any of the lingering racist attitudes that they may have picked up from their forebears, or they don't even realize the fact that they might still have some errant ancestors that are still whispering in their ears and influencing them. So I mention that because of the fact that we're in a world where we need one another. And
that is so true.
To deny what the things that divide, like assumptions in terms of intelligence and also in terms of what people can and cannot do, it's time to wake up and it's time to work together.
Yes.
And,
I agree.
And that's such an important point because whatever the issue is, like we live around here in Northern Virginia in a very – it's mixed culturally. Maybe the black population isn't as heavy as in some areas, but in D.C. a little more so much, but a lot of Middle Easterners, a lot of Asians, a lot of white people
Hispanics.
But a lot of Bolivians, Hispanic people. And the point is that if you need to get something done, you need help from others. You know, black people, I think, make up, I think it's 20% of the United States population, somewhere around 24%.
I thought it was
25%. 24. So my point is, you always need the help of other folks if you want to get something done, regardless of what group you're in. So I'm really glad you made that point of how we do, in fact, need each other.
Yes, we definitely do.
I would say that there is no such thing as prejudice when it comes to affliction and addiction. You know, well, now there are some people who will insist, well, I don't want this person to treat me or whatever. But most of the time, when people are vulnerable, they don't care. You know, it's just like, help me, feed me, give me what I need. If we can help one another, listen, you know, junkies aren't particular about who they get their hookups from. People in recovery are not, you know, they recover together and support each other as a community. I've been in the hospital a number of times and have had people from diverse populations, well, of course, women, but, you know, sharing the room. And when you're there struggling to stay alive because you're there for a really crucial illness, then you seem to forge a bond. So why is it when we're vulnerable and only when we're vulnerable that we are willing to work together when need be?
Yes. I've noticed that myself when I was a social worker for the county. And I also noticed that when my mom was in the hospital, that when you are sick and you're looking for people to help, you need, especially if you have some mobility issues and nobody wants to be walking around in a walker, wheelchair, cane, whatever, and you'll be surprised about a person that will be so racial in one setting will break down into, you know, all this, like a whimpering kid, once that mobility is taken away from him or her, or once they get sick and they need somebody in a race that they don't approve of to take care of them, how quickly they change.
I hear you.
Yes.
And I'd like to say, Queen Mother, and by the way, I just want to do a quick recap for folks that are just joining us. Really quick, we're talking to Queen Mother Imaku, and she's a priestess of the Kemetic tradition. She's as well going to be a new hostess for the Main Street Universe Radio Network, Thursdays at 1 p.m.
Yes, welcome.
Starting tomorrow, I believe, right, Queen Mother?
Indeed.
Okay, and we were discussing an issue that I thought a lot of pagans would be interested in, was the Kemetic origins of the runes, meaning the African origins of the runes.
That I've got to use mine since that's all I want. I'm going to be using my runes. So
a lot of pagans would not, and I'm sure would argue the point, but remember, things come back somewhere. You know, some people think the Romani witches originally, though it's a debatable thing, you come from India, I think there's probably some truth to that, but you know, these things are meant to be proved by scientists and everything else as well. But these things always have their origins. They don't just spring up, just like the Bible didn't spring up out of nowhere.
No.
So let's dig in now to a little bit of what you specifically do in the Akeru Temple. And Janice wanted this question. I believe it was the Shen Uret, if I said it properly, healing system?
Yes. I know that we have talked over the phone as well as on Facebook about your healing system, because you know that I do Reiki. In fact, I'm a Reiki master in two modalities, the original Ushui and Sakim, which is supposed to be the Reiki of Egypt or ancient Egypt. And I know I had spoke to you about your system, so could you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, certainly. But to keep things in Ma'at, which is very important in our tradition, I do also want to mention, though, that I found out regarding the Renu that, in truth, there were Kema'u, or people of Kemet, who were up in the Nordic region, who were some of the original Vikings. From a colleague.
I have, too.
That's interesting. Ka'anu. He was teaching that. He's a dear friend and a wonderful colleague. He teaches a great deal of history on his blog talk radio shows. And so one day I was listening, and this was around the time when I was trying to figure out the connection. And so he had a whole show talking about it, and I had to reach out to him after that because I said, you validated what I've been trying to find out. Now, you know, he cited a number of sources. I went to those sources and found that, yes, that was true. So I just want to be able to share that as well. Regarding the Shen Urit healing system, I was initiated as a water priestess in 06. Now, the Bantu tradition that I was initiated in, I did not realize was also related to the Kemetic culture. And many of our Kemetic ancestors traveled into into Central Africa, where Bantu tradition has, you know, been sprung up very strongly, and then also the Bantu had a great deal of influence also on Kemetic culture too. But when I was initiated, I had a really unique experience that happened to me, and I go into the story on our Akeru Ministries website. That's akeruministries.com. As of tomorrow, you will find that you'll be redirected to our new site. But anyway, you'll find the story there if you look up Shen Urit, S-H-E-N-U-R-R-I-T. When I was initiated by Michael Ortiz Hill, I was sitting out on the dock in, of all places, Massachusetts.
Okay.
And which is really odd because it was Massachusetts where I was given this last set of Renew by Mary Alice and the book by Galina Kraskova. And anyway, so back in 06, I was at this home in State Forest at this ancient lake. And I was a bit nervous about getting into doing the water baptism. I found out, by the way, that water baptism also comes from ancient Kemet. But this was the Bantu, a path of the peacemaker. Submerge yourself in the water three times. Or you have the initiator do it. Well, they will, you know, baptize you in the traditional way in the water. Michael Ortiz Hill at the time was suffering from multiple sclerosis and was unable to get in the water with me. But I actually had prayed that I'd be able to get in the water by myself. However, I can't swim. So I was a little bit more than nervous.
I can't swim either. I'd be very nervous.
Yeah, for a few reasons. One, if you learn about the ancient water traditions in the motherland, you find that there are stories of people who have been taken away by the water spirits to the realm beneath the ocean floor that is the domain of our ancestors who live there. And you are taken there for 7 years and fed their knowledge, their wisdom, and their mysticism. And then 7 years later, after everybody thinks that you're dead and gone, are returned to the shore that you were taken from. But you now return as a healer or a nanga for your people. I've connected with people who told me that they had relatives that have happened to them in our recent history, you know, within the last decade or so.
Okay.
So I was afraid of the water spirits taking me because I did not want my children to think I was dead.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, aside from the fact that I can't swim, is the fact that when I first got there and I looked out over the lake, I just kept seeing this image in my head of a sort of a sea surface kind of
Okay.
I remember asking my host, how old is this lake, you know? And then later I was told, you know, they say that there are stories of a sort of a Loch Ness kind of
a
thing.
Loch Ness monster. Yeah, that's what I thought as soon as you said that.
I do not need to hear that right now. Okay. I was more than a bit nervous, and so I the day before my initiation, I took my drum out on the dock to get myself. Well, to give myself enough moxie so I could get in the water the next day, but also to just kind of commune with everything that was there. I always commune with nature wherever I go, and I wanted to bond with this very strange place up in Massachusetts, and So as I started drumming on this shallow pier, this frog popped up in the water directly in front of me, 5 feet in front of me. And it just sat there. And I was drumming for about an hour. Now, one of my hosts, she had come out onto the dock with me, and she, in fact, was a bit grumpy because Michael Ortiz Hill forgot to tell her that I was coming. So it was a very last-minute thing to find out that I was coming to be baptized. But, you know, she decided to come out and sit with me because she was trying to get over it, you know, trying to be nice. And so when I finished drumming an hour later, she quietly pointed behind me, and a black snake had coiled up 5 feet behind me. I was right directly in the middle of this frog and this snake, and the frog had sat there the entire time, and she said the snake had come out and slithered out and stayed there for the entire time, too. And she said, had I not here to see it, I would not have believed it. So then she said, let's go to the water's edge and see if we can find the ancient turtle. There was an old, old turtle that she said really didn't like people. She said, well, maybe he'll come up for you. We walked to the water's edge, and all it just popped right up, looked at me like, hello. So she said, this is real. You are supposed to be initiated. You are a water priestess. And she was so nice to me after that. So then the next day, I brought my drum out again. It was the day of the initiation. So I sat in the same spot, started drumming again. The same frog popped up in the same spot in the water. When I finished, I turned around and looked, and don't you know, that same snake was behind me in the same spot. And this is not a metaphor. It was not a figment of my imagination. I mean, they actually were there. People saw them, you know. But I felt aligned with the energies. Mm-hmm. I was in alignment. And so Michael said, okay, you do your prayers in your tradition, and then I'll do the prayers in the Shona and Ndebele tradition. And so I opened the way, you know, in the Kemetic way. And I must also say that before I went to this initiation, just so we're clear, because people hop from place to place to place and thing to thing to thing, I went to my Atefnachir, my godfather, Grandmaster Cam, my beloved godfather, who initiated me into the Kemetic path, and who my Ankh threw, and who conferred the title of Queen Mother upon me. I consulted him first, because this is what you should do. You consult your elder, your mentor first. I got his take on it. What do you think about this? You know, I feel this real strong compulsion to go. He said, obviously there is something that you need to get to retrieve back for our people. So go get it. So with his blessings, I went forward with the initiation. And what he ended up referring to was what ended up happening to me after I got in the water. After Michael did the prayers and he asked the water spirits to accept me, and so he said, there you go, my dear, you know, because he couldn't get in the water. So I took my Ankh, stepped off into the shallow part of the water, and I squished my Ankh in the water. And then I put my Ankh back up on the pier. And I walked into the water. I went as far out as I could go. And I submerged myself. And I remember feeling my locks fly up above me, you know, or float up above me in the water. And you stay down as long as you can. So that was a real bold act because, again, I didn't know what was in that water. And because, you know, but I truly felt that part of myself left. Because when you do the baptism, you really are supposed to feel reborn. This is where the Baptist tradition came from, okay? Mm-hmm. So when I came out of the water the third time, I was surrounded in this perfect circle by these little silver and blue iridescent fish. They were all facing in toward me, and they expanded out as I moved up higher in the water. You know, as like, you know, with my shoulders and so forth, they expanded out, but they stayed in the circle, and I felt electric currents coming toward me. And I was thinking at the time, dag, I already have epilepsy. What y'all trying to do to me, you know? But I remember after that feeling like I was like in trance. And I made my way over to the dock, and I picked up my Ankh, and I just started doing energy work on Michael. When I left the water, rather, my hands were buzzing. They have been buzzing to this day. Mind you, I mean, I'm ordained as a healing minister. That happened years and years before. I've been doing healing work. I went through Reiki, you know, all that. And this was something completely different. So, long story short, Michael shared with me after I worked on that, where the places where my hands went were the places where when he went to the neurologist the next time, he was told the lesions were gone. There was no trace of anything. It wasn't the same as like, because with MS, you know, you have scar tissue that kind of heals over a bit, but, you know, it usually there's something that's left behind. Everything was gone. He told me that the doctor was amazed and said that MS was gone. And that's the way it was when I would be working on people. Now, mind you, I did not make the connection that I had gotten this healing energy with me back out of the water. I didn't make the connection. All I knew was that strange things were happening to folks after I'd initiate them in and pass on, you know, just doing, I thought this happened to everybody who got initiated in the water tradition, that they'd come out with their hands buzzing. I didn't know that wasn't the case. I checked with Michael. I checked with Baba Mandaza, who also months later also did initiation on me, and they said no. So it wasn't until last year, and I suppose I was ready to receive it by that point, when I realized that there were comedic symbols that directly spoke to what happened to me. Hmm. Don't you know there is a symbol of a frog riding a snake?
Wow.
And all of the words connected to that symbol are all descriptive of what this energy is like. It strips, it purifies, it will turn on people who are undeserving. You know, it's amazing. And it's called Shenlorit. So I've learned that for the people who took my Aritu or chakra balancing classes, that they received the energy beautifully. And they discovered that it was love energy, because it is. It's the energy of Sekhmet and the energy of Heteru. But for people who came with ill intentions, or who were not aligned and had not done the work on themselves, the energy turned on them, because it acts like a mirror. It reflects all your garbage up to you. It reflects all the love in your heart up to you, but it also reflects all the junk and all the stuff you need to work on. I mean, instantly. So now I have my students go through extensive Aritu work. That is part of their training and their classes when they study with me. And before they become initiated, they have to go through them, otherwise they cannot receive the energy. So now that I know what's going on, and it's very, very clear, and again, being able to look back and compare with, okay, well, this happened to this one, this happened to this one. And, I mean, all of these people's issues just, you know, when they were disingenuous, they just came right up. And so it's powerful stuff, but also powerful in the way that it will expand the love that you have in your heart. It will expand the understanding that you have not only of yourself but also of those, of others around you. It gives you deeper wisdom, and it also works well with the other energy systems like Reiki. This is, you know, what I've been told, because, you know, the Reiki, it really didn't do much for me. You know, in fact, my mentor had told me years ago when I told her, like, well, I'm going to go and get Reiki. And so she was like, why? And so then she said, well, if you feel like you need to, okay, but, you know, it's probably going to feel like you're downshifting. And she actually was right. So I hadn't messed with
that's
the
her
Reiki
opinion,
for,
though.
Well, no, no, I'm talking about for me, for what happened with me.
Okay.
I'm not knocking Reiki. I have some righteous Reiki masters in my temple. I mean righteous, okay?
Yeah.
Who I recommend and who I call. Listen to what I'm saying now. Because I was talking about for me, okay?
Okay.
So just so we're clear. But anyway, so that's the story of the with the Shenorit. And So I'm finding that it's really important to be a a careful guardian of this energy. I'm not doing things like generate shares or anything like that and just passing it off to any old body because it's just not meant to be that way. I mean, I've discovered that from observation and from experience now. So, but it is certainly when I do do the healing work and when other people do it and, you know, I share it with different people in that way, then it's greatly beneficial. And for that, I am truly, truly glad.
And Queen Mother,
when I say I don't share it with anybody, I mean as far as passing it on so that it becomes part of another person's healing system. If they're not ready, they're not ready. And if they're not, if their heart's not right, it's not, you know, that just can't happen.
I understand that. Yeah. And one thing I think is fascinating, and for those of you just joining us, by the way, we extend the time because you're just an amazing guest, and I love listening to you. And you're listening to Queen Mother Imaku, and she's going to start doing her own show here on Main Street Universe Thursdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. So feel free to tune in and welcome her, and I think you'll learn a whole lot. I always learn something when I talk to you. And I want to get to my next question, but at first I want to say that this is a second conversation that we've had recently where before we were talking about Amber Kay, then it came up that she was a guest. You and I had talked about Amber Kay. You said it was an early book that you bought, and bam, it came up as a guest. And also when you mentioned the tadpole frog thing, because I was researching for another show we were doing about death and reincarnation, and of course I got the frog thing, and I just did it the other day, and I was talking about how a tadpole develops legs to begin a new life between its two known worlds, I guess, that are going to be known as a frog.
There was a lot of frogs at PSG, too, with all the rain.
I used to have a cat that let a toad sit on top of its head, but I don't know if that's related. But not very natural for a cat, but he was.
I actually had a baby frog jump into my hands while I was PSG.
That was like, wow, cool.
That's interesting. What a blessing that was. Wow. Tremendous. Tremendous.
Yes.
I wanted to get Queen Mother to, as well, because we haven't gotten there yet, to some of your work as far as artist and musician, if you want to plug some of that, because you're a musician and singer. Ginny
yes.
Is aware of that. And
yes.
I plug you every Thursday,
except for tomorrow. And I have a question. Tell me your motivation for the song Ashe, Ashe, because every Thursday except for tomorrow, I open up my world reggae party with your song. And last week when I was having a celebration for my mother because she passed over on Memorial Day, the third song was Sacred Mother. And, you know, when that went up, the lights got perkier, and when I went outside, I had saw a butterfly. And this is like at night when you're not thinking about butterflies are actually flying. But I know my mom loved butterflies, and butterflies is one of my totems. So I just wanted to know the motivation for both of those songs.
Well, thank you for that, and I thank you so much for your I remember when you asked me if you'd be allowed to share it, you know, why would I say no? I mean, you know, you want people to hear your stuff, you know, so I thank you so much for that. So thank you for thinking of me, and I'm glad so much that you appreciate the song. And also Sacred Mother, and that those are both on my Water Woman CD.
Yeah,
I mean, my Water Woman story is on there. It is a woman's story. It is also a story of... That is very inspirational for black folks when they hear it. But definitely women from all backgrounds resonate with the story. So anyway, the Water Woman CD you can find by going to my website, www.queenmotherimaku.com. Ashe was a song that I actually originally wrote when I was still Yoruba.
Uh-huh.
Ashe refers to the crown Ari, or the crown chakra, and it is the connection point for the ancestors and for the high creative force. It is said, according to Louisa Tisha's book, Jambalaya, that if your ashe is out of alignment, then you need to have spiritual cleansing, because when your ashe is out of alignment, then you can't tell who your friends are, who your enemies are. People can do all kinds of things to you because of the fact that your power center is not correct. And mm-hmm. it's always important to know who is and who ain't, all right?
Yeah.
But the song talks basically about it being your power center, but also about hearkening back to the strength of our ancestral tradition. The rap that I do in the beginning, before the song kicks in, stressing unity within community, keeping spirit strong, like the elders of long ago, I know we can't go it alone. Don't forget what we own. If we throw away the crown, that which keeps us aligned to the divine force, we're thrown off course by those claiming to be angels unaware. Tearing the shirts off their backs like what a steady ride in yours, like a boo hag, sucking up your life force. Know you have a recourse. Ashe, ashe.
I know it. And I think that's the mm-hmm. the best opening for World Reggae Party is that, because I've tried other songs, and I keep going back to Ashe, Ashe. So you definitely have a fan in me, sister.
Well, thank you. And I eventually used it as the theme song for my radio show, Ashe, and then my TV show, Ashe. You can see episodes of Ashe on my YouTube channel. That's at youtube.com/Imaku. Imakhu, and that show started out in the TV studio in Princeton, and eventually I took it on myself and made it a magazine show, which is what I wanted it to really be in the first place. I'm on the road so much, and one day I realized, hey, I've got my digital camera, and I'm around all these well-known people, you know, I'd be on the venue with, and so I just started interviewing people, and then I started adding segments that I wanted to add, you know, dealing with healthy food and with African-centered art projects and incorporating sacred belly dance and all of this, but mainly to be a source of information for the community for cultural education. Sacred Mother was that was long after I came into Kemetic culture, and so it's honoring all of the sacred divinity of the matriarchy, although the names that are called are Kemetic guardians, the female deities. And, of course, well, they're not all because there are so many, but there are certainly a lot in that song. But, I mean, the lyrics are, I am ancient, I am timeless, you know, I am wellspring, I am wisdom, I am mother. So this is something that speaks to all of us as women, for those of us especially who are trying to reclaim the divine feminine that we possess, and knowing that we have power in our womanness, and remembering that our mothers have been the ones that have kept things together traditionally. Mm-hmm. Our mothers have been the ones who have kept the culture traditionally, passing on stories, passing on ways that we do things in the family. I'm not knocking dads, you know, because, hey, dads, I love my father. I loved him when he was, you know, I still love him in spirit. He's still with me every day. But there is something about the energy of the mother and the ancient mother. We are reclaiming our ancient ancient wise woman traditions,
mm-hmm.
which is so very important, because with today's world, a lot of us have lost a lot of those things. You know, there's something that really dismayed me one time. I was teaching my class a couple years ago, and the topic of a witch's bottle came up.
Okay.
So I said, okay, well, if you bring it up, I guess it's time to share that. And then all of them were like, oh, yeah, I saw that online. They're posting all these different links, you know. I was like, what? I mean, and a lot of the recipes for it were wrong, too. But, I mean, still the whole thing is that it was this. I thought it was like a desecration, because that was something that was generally passed on from woman to woman. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? And,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't something like that's not supposed to be put up online. the ways of ancient dance, the sacred dance, which is now known as belly dance, but
yeah.
was originally a sacred dance that our foremothers did when they gathered together under the cover of night and under the full moon to communally shed blood and and to dance and to drum in order to transmute that energy of the blood being shed. What do I mean by that? Well, we as women are natural receptors. And we, whether we want to or not, pull in the toxicity of our environments. And through the shedding of the blood, that is a way of being able to transmute and release that energy. And our ancient foremothers would give that issue of blood back to the earth for nourishment, but also for protection of the community that they lived in. There was a lot of celebration. There were sacred meanings that went along with the certain tonalities of tonality of the drum, with certain movements in the dance. And as the matriarchy descended into transitioned into patriarchy. I'll be kind.
Ascended one.
Or descended maybe.
That's funny,
so.
We
do have a caller, and I'll keep a close eye and make sure if it's not something bad. I think I recognize the number, so I'm going to go ahead and take this.
Peace and blessings.
Hello, and welcome to Main Street Universe.
Hi.
Hello, you're on the air. Your mic's on.
Yes. I ask a question or?
Oh, yeah, you're on the air with Queen Mother Imaku.
Peace and blessings. How are you?
Hi. I have a question pertaining to, like, love and relationships.
Okay. Oh, are you calling for a reading show? Oh, we're not doing
a reading show. Yeah,
I don't have my tarot deck with me this afternoon.
Evening. Sorry.
I apologize.
Oh. Okay.
I have my renew.
Hold on. She's going to pull out the runes, the renew.
We have a treat here.
Absolutely. So stay on the line then.
Your question.
I recently broke up with someone, and I'm wondering if he's going to contact me or not.
Well, let me ask you something, because, see, now I don't approach doing consultations in the way where it is, well, can you tell me this, can you tell me that? I mean, because I look at it as a counseling session, too. So I want to first ask you, before we delve in, why do you want to have him contact you?
Because I
want to
give things another try. Yes.
So what?
The answer to the question is yes, and because I want to give things another try, like the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you know, even without opening the renew, there is, I'm getting that there's something that you're missing here in terms of your needing to move forward, something that is hidden that you do not want to see. Never roll the dice. Connections here. It looks like there's a good chance that he will. The question is, will you be happy afterwards if he does? This symbol Rick, which is similar to the symbol Lebus, deals with proper timing, but also within it is a mirror and the mirage. There's something in it that you are not facing square on, in terms of why you should move forward, okay? This is all a matter of your making up your mind, changing your mind about the situation for your own benefit. So, looks like there's a good chance you will, but the question is, do you really want it to?
Yes.
Well, what I'm saying is, take another look at it. You really want him to?
It was a really short relationship. It was, like, really short. So for that reason, I'm willing to give it another try because, yeah.
Okay. Well, like I said, just keep in mind. Just keep your eyes open, okay, and your mind open. The main thing you want to ask for in the situation is truth, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. What is your name?
Alphina.
Delphina?
Alphina, A-L-P-H-I-N-E.
Alphina, okay. Alphina, thank you so much for calling in, and best of luck to you. We say Shai Nefer, which means good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Alphina.
Thank you, Alphina.
And I think what Queen Mother was trying to say, sometimes you think you want something back, but at the same time, is it a really good idea for you?
Yes,
I mean, you might be able to make
it.
To
have him back.
Yeah.
Maybe she should ask herself that.
And Queen Mother, we're down to about 18 minutes left. I wanted to get onto another aspect of your ministry. And before you leave, I want you to hear a sample, by the way, Queen Mother, of Janice's show. We still have it uploaded here, but we won't do that yet. We'll do that in a minute. It's actually an episode where she does something you might be familiar with, and then right after I do, I play a song in the studio with her.
Okay.
It was for her one-year anniversary.
My one-year anniversary. It'll be 2 years in October.
2 years in October. So as part of your ministry, you also have a prison ministry program as well. I wonder if you can maybe just explain that a little bit.
Well, we actually need to really revive the prison ministry program because I'm just one person. But we've got a group of wonderful new priesthood members who I'm sure will be able to give me a hand with this because, you know, I've been doing an awful lot by myself, but it is very much donation-based in terms of being able to reproduce material to send to the various people in prison who have contacted me who are looking for the Kemetic teachings. And so if there are people out there who want to make donations specifically for the prison ministry, then please, you can go to the Akeru Ministries website, and you'll find a place where you'll be able to make donations and specifically say that it is for the prison ministry. And this is why it's important, because there's a great deal of recidivism, and people who end up returning, you know, the repeat offenders,
mm-hmm.
because they are not given the tools in prison to really give them a head start, and especially for those who are seeking the path to their own culture. And because of the fact that many folks are aware that, you know, going back to the source means going back to Kemet, you know, there are folks who want to connect with that, but the materials are not provided. You know, in providing materials, that way people can start their own study groups and I'm always given a specific address so that it goes through a certain way so that, you know, people know there's good material in there, it's not contraband, you know, that kind of thing. The 42 laws which we base our foundation upon are an excellent way to be able to retune yourself, to focus your energies and shift your patterning so that it'll be much easier for you to step back into society and be focused on your spiritual pursuits and getting past whatever you may or may not have done and moving forward.
And I think it's an interesting thing, and the reason why I wanted to bring it up briefly is because, well, A, you know, an unfortunate amount, a large amount of African-American men are incarcerated in a large number. And basically, I bring it all down to many different things, including the war on drugs. I think after the civil rights movement, now I don't want to make this conversation too long because we have limited time. It is not a political show. I'm not necessarily a political show, but I don't mind touching upon politics when it crosses upon spirituality in a proper way. So, you know, all these policies that basically, you know, the building of jails at one time was growing at such a rapid rate that the population of the prison system for all of America's history and all the world's history, the United States of America incarcerates more people than any
country that is
country.
Any that has ever existed.
Yes.
Period. More than some known tyrannies combined. More than the old Soviet Union. More than even countries with many more people. Think of that. Think of China and all of that.
Yes.
So the policies are set in order in a corporate fashion to build more jails and then to propagate, but we're not going to go too far with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a good idea that, you know, you're doing a prison ministry because the people born into that system, if they can find a spiritual sense of themselves, it's the best. It's kind of the best they can do. I mean, you can't always change the whole thing. You can't just go and change the whole system. But if you can change internally, you know, as within, so without.
Well, yes, and while your show is not a political show, I must say, still, I'm an activist. I'm a minister who believes. Well, let me finish. I'm a minister who believes in getting involved in the community. If you're spiritually awake, then that means that you have a responsibility to not only yourself in terms of how you act, but also to making effective change for the better in your community. Now, having said that, I've done a great deal of work with kids in lockdown, and it's a sad state of affairs because they are picking kids up off the street for no reason at all, just to fill up these detention homes, which are a business. They're privately funded, and these prisons are as well. So there are a lot of men who are getting falsely arrested. And that's why I said, depending on what they may or may not have done, because...
Exactly. I know what you meant. and no, don't get me wrong when I say it's not a political show. What I mean is to make it an entirely politically angry show. But if it's important to bring it up, I bring it up. You know what I mean?
We'll bring it up.
Yeah, and you have to point the cameras and the microphones and all of that at injustice. And that's part of it. That's part of a spiritual path, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I agree with you totally on that.
And
like I said, but you know, sometimes you know you hear those Fox shows, and as soon as they start, it's like anger. It's like right wing anger.
Oh, yeah.
It is. Oh my gosh.
Very angry about everything lately.
But Queen Mother, I think we've discussed all we're going to discuss tonight, Janice. Unless it's another question.
Well, I want to know, how did she get into storytelling?
Okay, go ahead, Janice.
Oh.
Go ahead. One more question.
Okay. I wanted to know, how did you get into storytelling, especially doing it professionally?
Storytelling has been in my family a long time. I mean, you know, the bottom line, my father was one of the best storytellers. My grandfather on my mother's side, you know, I mean, I was born into a family of storytellers who would hold people spellbound, have them cracking up for hours. And so it also was part of my being in the church. Now, again, here's the thing about not knocking the church, because there was a lot of good that I got from it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was typical for a person who was a soloist, and I was a soloist in the church. I observed that all the best soloists usually had a really good story before they sang. So I followed suit. And that was when I was 15. I actually had my first paying gig when I was 15 years old. I'm 53 years old. I've been in the business professionally that long.
You do not look 53. You do not look 53.
I started really hammering down and doing it professionally when my children were in grade school. And, you know, because I found that I could go and perform at local schools or local theaters or, you know, within the tri-state area and be back by the time they got home from school and still pick them up and help them with their homework, carpool, and all this. At that point in the 80s, storytelling had become really in vogue, and everybody thought that they could get up and tell a story. So you had actors, you had electricians, and, you know, housewives.
It's hard, actually. It's hard getting up and stating a story.
Skills that must be honed, and you must really do your research regarding history, regarding culture, you know, finding out what is really in the essence of the story, because good stories will tell you about what people thought, about what their morals were, how they lived, how they died, and so there's so much more to a story. The morals that go along tell you about the moral code of each society, and going across the continent, there are so many thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of stories, and seeing how they related to the stories that were brought here and the new stories that have come up because the culture that happened from slavery and so forth. I mean, but it's amazing. It's amazing. I am constantly creating new stories too, but I always bring it back to a cultural standpoint. It's important for us to be able to understand each other in terms of culture. And, you know, culture can change from block to block, from house to house. You can have
right.
people of the same belief system who have variances in what they believe. You can have people in the same culture who have variances in what they practice and how they live. Understanding why, especially through the story entertains, the story uplifts, it inspires, it warns, and it teaches, you know. So all of that comes from a really good story, and I find that my most enjoyable shows are the ones where I do a storytelling concert. To be able to see people just be, to hold an audience in the palm of your hands for anywhere from 1 to 2 hours is one of the greatest joys. For some, that sounds like a challenge. For me, listen, I always tell people, if I'm in a coma, just stick a microphone in my face. I've been talking for a living throughout my life, and most of it has been through metaphor, even if it's sharing what's going on in my life to make a point. There is power in the story. There
mm-hmm.
is a there's a system out there where they get people in. I'm not going to name the name of the organization, but they tell people that stories are just stories, and it's just your version, and it doesn't mean anything because it's just a story. That's a lie.
Words have
and
power.
I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because your story
power.
Is valid, your story is valid, yours and yours and yours, everybody who is listening to me right now, your story has weight. It validates your existence. It validates the way that you are. They are beneficial. The story is you. Your life has meaning.
Yes.
The meaning
I like it
is meant
too.
To be So all of this
Mother?
Is important. So this is the last thing I want to say. So anybody who tells you that, you know, stories are not important, don't believe them, because that basically is saying that you're not important, and you are.
I agree.
And we both agree completely.
Yes, completely.
And it's been awesome having you this evening. We're going to wrap up now. And before we do, just any plugs you want to send out there. I did attach your Queen Mother Imaku website to our show page. At one time it wasn't working well. I don't know if you were working on it or something like that, but any plugs you want to do, feel free.
Yeah,
right.
I'm changing servers, and so
that's
right. Yeah, is there
going to
be a first CD out?
By the end of tonight, it's going to be back up, so you can still go to queenmotherimaku.com. By Friday, the new website for Akinu Ministry should be up, and it will redirect you. If you'd like to buy my music, then you can't. Well, I'll be putting some links up from Kunaki, but then also, again, go to queenmotherimaku.com. My latest CD, Solstice, is up and has been selling rather nicely. Also, if there are stores near you that you would like to get my music and lectures, I have lectures and CDs. Please contact me and let me know, so that way I can work with the proper distributor to get them into an area near you. Shout out to my Akeru family. I love you all. Love, love, love my Akeru Temple family. And also, if you want to know more about the Kemetic Path and how it can bring you peace as well as personal power, please contact me. I just started another round of classes. And, you know, I'm doing classes also basically on Kemetic culture. Okay? We meet in New Jersey. We have Chem Union. We call it Chem Union. There's just so much more. Go to the Akeru Ministries website. And it's been a pleasure being with both of you today. Thank you again for having me. And I'm grateful to be a part now of the Main Street University.
Oh, yes.
Hooray, hooray. Get the symbol.
All right. I'm
going to
get that CD, Solstice.
And we're very glad to have you. I mean, I could listen to you for hours and hours and hours, and I guess I will if you're part of the network. But I can't always join you in your time frame there. But anyway, you've been listening to Queen Mother Imaku. She'll be on her own show every Thursday on the Main Street Universe Radio Network, Thursdays at 1 p.m. Learn about the Kemetic tradition and so many other things, art, music, lectures,
life coaching, school projects, prison projects. And now here is a little bit of what she does on Janice's show,
and also
myself, or what I did right afterwards, if it's still there and we got the time.
Above and below, make a space. I am one with the spirit. Ashe, ashe.
I am one with the spirit. Ashe, ashe. And that was made by my very good friend, Queen Mother Amaku. That's her song, and I love it very dearly. And tonight, it's Thursday night. 7:03, time for World Reggae Party. And ha-ha, it's my first year at World Reggae Party from 10/11/2011 to 10/11/2012. I got a clap machine. Let me get it. Okay. We're both clapping.
I do have a clap machine.
And World Reggae Party. World is my mission, reggae is my message, and party is my goal. Tonight we have a special guest, and he's one of my friends, and we both host Main Street Universe together, and his name is Daniel Nolan Michael. Yay! And he's here to sing a Bob Marley song for us. He will sing the classic No Woman, No Cry. So, without further ado, we have Daniel Michael, No Woman, No Cry, on World Reggae Party with Goddess Janice.
Thank you very much, Janice. And here's sort of my version on this. No cry, no man, no cry, no woman, no cry. Said I remember when we used to sit in the government yard in Trench Town, observing all the hypocrites as they would mingle with the good people we meet. Good friends we had, good friends we lost along the way. In this great future, you can't forget your past. So dry your tears, I say. No woman, no cry. No woman, no cry. Here, little darling, don't shed no tears. No woman, no cry. Did I remember when we used to sit in the government yard in Trench Town? And then Georgie would make the fire light as it was logwood burning through the night. And then we would cook cornmeal porridge, of which I'll share with you. My feet is my only carriage, so I've got to push on through. Everything's gonna be alright. 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 No woman, no cry. She's just a woman, no.